Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio. I'm Lori Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is...
Oh, thank you, Lori. Bernie Siegel, calling in from Greenwich Village, New York.
Yes, Bernie just was on a long vacation upstate, and now he's back home, so we're glad to have him here. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We believe at Coach Chat that if you change your perspective, you can change your entire life. And we developed this show for coaches and those interested in one of the fastest-growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And we have such a special treat today. Our guest is calling in from Puerto Rico, Alfredo Carrasquillo. I hope I didn't murder your name. How you doing, Alfredo?
I'm doing fine. Glad to be with you both and with everyone who's listening at Coach Chat Radio. It's a pleasure.
We are thrilled to have you. Let me tell you a little bit about this gentleman, and you'll see why we're thrilled to have him. Alfredo is an executive leadership coach, a psychoanalyst, and an organizational development consultant based in Puerto Rico. He has served as director, vice chair, advisor, and chairperson of nonprofit and corporate boards of directors in Puerto Rico and the United States. In January 1999, he was selected by the International Development Conference, the James P. Grant Trust, the World Bank, and the Inter-American Development Bank as one of the 60 leading young social entrepreneurs in the world, becoming the sole Caribbean member of the Common Futures Forum. Now, in 2007, he was selected one of the 10 members of the top 10 management for Puerto Rico and the Caribbean, a selection made by Top 10 Management Spain of the 10 most distinguished management consultants in the Caribbean region. We are so thrilled to have you. Thank you, Alfredo, for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Okay, Bernie, I'm going to let you take it away.
Well, thank you, and welcome, Alfredo. Our listeners love to know a little bit about your journey, how you got to what you're doing today, and if you could just give us just a couple of minutes, if it's that long, on how you got to become a coach, and I'm sure people would love to hear it.
It's an interesting story because I had no idea what coaching was aside from sports coaches, and I had decided I wanted to be a psychoanalyst, so I went to Mexico City, to become a psychoanalyst. That was in 1992, and while I was in Mexico in September 1993, I was kidnapped. And I had to leave Mexico City after that kidnapping experience. I couldn't stay for security reasons. So I came back to Puerto Rico, and I had no plans. The semester had already started in the U.S. and in Puerto Rico. So I had to do some volunteer work as an option until the time I could get back to a university setting. After that, I went to New York to the New School for Social Research to continue my studies. But then in doing voluntary work, I was invited by some nonprofit organizations. Well, if you were being trained to become a psychoanalyst, you must know a little bit about how to listen to other people. So we have some community groups and some organizational teams that are not getting along quite well. So perhaps you could listen to them for a while and see if you could do something or help them somehow to solve some of the issues that they are facing. So I did that, and I have to say I discovered a fascinating world of group dynamics, interactions, the role of leaders, and I said in my ignorance at that point, maybe as a psychoanalyst I can use what I will learn to have some interventions in organizational and community contexts, as if I was discovering a new continent, to learn afterwards that was a huge academic field. And so it turned me into, yes, I would decide to go ahead with my psychoanalytic training, but I would continue my doctoral studies in the field of organizational development and leadership studies. And as part of that, I had the privilege of being a classmate in my doctoral program with Barbara Braham, a wonderful executive coach who was based in Columbus, Ohio. And she began talking to me about coaching and about the opportunity of using what I had learned in my training as a psychoanalyst to do that type of work and the connection with ontological coaching. Long story short, I used the internship in my doctoral program to do my coaching certification, and many, many years after, here I am. I did continue for some years my psychoanalytic practice, but most of my work, and nowadays my sole practice, is in the field of organizational development and executive coaching. So paradoxically, I have to thank Three Kidnappers for allowing me to become a coach.
Well, Bernie, I'll bet you didn't expect that answer, did you?
No. And Alfredo didn't have the coaching skills to get himself with the kidnappers, and he still somehow got free.
I hope you're writing a book as we speak, Alfredo. I'm dying to hear the whole story on that.
Oh, my goodness.
Bernie and I both went, oh, what? So that is a very interesting story, and how coach would like of you to say, well, thank you to the kidnappers, because now I'm a coach. So I love that. Looking at your bio, you're an executive leadership coach, but I noticed that you have some cool things like democratic practice in business and the citizenship of private business. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, I think that moving away from what Milton Friedman used to say, that the only responsibility of businesses is with their stockholders and owners, I am convinced that businesses have a social responsibility and a political responsibility as well. And nowadays, that's even more important. So in my understanding, there are two issues which are important here. How we, as citizens, commit to making sure that we have leadership pieces in our countries in the field of politics that are democratic and that actually create the conditions for a more civilized, a more civic environment, and something different from what we actually have in our country. And on the other side, that business people and business leaders are not spectators of what happens in the public sphere and in politics, but instead they are political actors as well. By political actors, I'm not saying members of a political party, but actually people who are concerned and have a say in what happens in the city. So in my work with leaders in the private and public and nonprofit sector, I always try to challenge leaders with their role aside from or jointly with what they do for their organizations and to make sure that their businesses are successful, that they have to understand that business results are connected with having a healthy society and a democratic society. And that's what explains my interest in those topics.
Wow. Mm. It's becoming in the forefront now a topic. I think Ray Dalio and the Wall Street guy is saying capitalism is failing because so many people are being left behind. And so I completely agree with you that some big issues that really need to be dealt with. So that's great. I also mentioned that you were a psychoanalyst, and I guess the first thing that came to mind was how do you find having that background helping you in coaching, or maybe hindering you in coaching?
Yeah, well, I have to say first, and I always say this in coaching context, that it was psychoanalysis, as my training as a psychoanalyst, what taught me to listen. And I think that by having been a psychoanalyst first, it allowed me to understand how to listen, which I always say is listening to what it said, listening to what it silenced, and listening to what the body is saying that contradicts what words are saying. So that I learned mm-hmm. from psychoanalysis. Of course, my work as a consultant and as a coach is not clinical work, but a different kind of work, and the objectives of the experience and the logic of the experience of coaching is different. But I have to be grateful to psychoanalysis for that capacity, first, to listen in depth, but also to understand the complexity of issues behind business families, behind group dynamics and power relations in an organizational setting, and everything that is under the tip of the iceberg. Without being a clinician in organizational settings, it definitely allows you to understand the complexity of some of the issues we are dealing with.
Wow. Great combination, obviously, yeah. Let me ask you something. I know that you've coached both in the United States and in Puerto Rico, of course. Well, is there a difference? What is the difference that you find?
Well, I've worked with leaders in 13 different countries. So what I would say is that, yes, there is a cultural dimension in the work of leaders. And there's a political context and a business context for every person you work with. But not only to say that Puerto Rico as a context is different from the U.S. or from Argentina or Colombia or South Africa, that even in each one of those countries, depending in the region in which you are or with which segment of the population you're working, there are differences. And nowadays, that's even more important because no matter where I work, business teams, executive leadership teams are incredibly diverse. I was working last week with the executive leadership team of a hotel chain, and there are 14 people in that team from 7 different countries who speak different languages. That's becoming more and more common in most organizational settings. So for a coach, developing a cultural intelligence and understanding and being able to grasp at that diversity and being able to listen to what is important in each one of those contexts is important. The other important dimension or included in that reflection is the use of the body and nonverbal expressions that is quite different in different cultures. And for example, if you're in the U.S., depending on the region in which you are or with which cultural background that leader operates, you will see that the issue of nonverbal communication has a more or less important place. So in my understanding, coaches, if they want to be effective and listen adequately, they have to be very cognizant about those cultural differences to be able to grasp as much as they should in listening to what people are saying.
Wow. Yeah. I remember many years ago I had a client that had offices in Switzerland and Israel and California and Asia, and I was always amazed at the different perspectives that the employees had. I really had to learn that the gentleman in Switzerland wanted to be told what to do, and the one in California really didn't care what I said. So it was fascinating to get some of that experience, cultural experience. Alfredo, a question is what are you finding today, other than COVID, because I think that topic has been so talked to death, other than COVID, in the workplace, what are the biggest challenges that you're finding that your leaders are facing right now?
Well, I think that it was summarized by the regional leader of Manpower yesterday in an interview in an Argentinian newspaper in which she said, we are going back to the future of the workplace. We are not going back to what we had before the pandemic. We are going back to the future, to a totally new and different scenario. And the element today is a profound level of uncertainty. So leaders today in my perspective, I for many years I had to work in do some work in South Africa, so I had to travel a lot. That's a very long flight to Johannesburg from New York or Atlanta. So when you're in the middle of that long flight and there's a noise in the cabin, what you do is that you look at the flight attendants, and if they are fine, chilling, serving wine, you keep reading or watching a movie or sleeping. But one day there was a not very nice noise in the cabin, and I looked at the flight attendants, and they were incredibly scared. So I got really scared. I use this analogy to say leaders today are like flight attendants. They have to understand that even if they are incredibly scared about what is happening, even if the uncertainty is hitting them very hard, they have to be, they have to understand that they are the people to whom everyone in the organization is looking. And if they communicate uneasiness, that's the environment they will create in the organization. So yes, they are dealing with a lot of uncertainty, vulnerability, uneasiness, but they have to be leaders, which is they have to handle that inside them and process that and have the emotional intelligence to be effective leaders and bring hope to people in that context of uncertainty. How they do that, how they handle the business continuity as to be as to succeed in the middle of and to survive in the middle of this juncture, and at the same time look to the future, the long-term future of the organization. That combination of elements and challenges is what leaders are facing today, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I love that analogy. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Flight attendants, I like that. So obviously, I mean, yes, it is. You're right, Bernie. We've talked it to death, but we can't ignore it. And certainly in Puerto Rico and the United States inland, there have been natural disasters all over the place. And you throw in COVID. As coaches, we tell everybody, let's embrace change. Yay. I'm not sure we're still doing that. What changes have you made in your coaching strategies?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I was one of those coaches that was convinced until the beginning of the pandemic that web-based connections or remote coaching, virtual connections were only used whenever there was no possibility to have face-to-face interaction. So even when I was coaching leaders outside of Puerto Rico, I would ask the organization to fly me to Jamaica or to Miami or to Colombia or whatever for the couple of sessions at the beginning, at the middle of the experience, and at the end. And then I would have the rest via Skype or something. Given that now during the pandemic, I was forced to move from March 14th on all my work into a remote virtual mode, I have convinced myself that it works. It works quite well and even sometimes better. So that has been a humble learning for me, that I was suspicious of it being as effective. So that has been a change. The other change is that, of course, you have to be there to support people and to be a thinking partner in a very complicated juncture. So you have to be very flexible with your scheduling and with what people and teams actually need in this particular moment. I would say those two elements have been key in this particular moment. And to be very careful about that tendency in the world and in our country. There is like a cultural mandate that says we all have to be happy and well and everything and look at on the positive side of everything. No, these are junctures in which people have a right to be sad. And they have there's dignity in sadness. Of course, you cannot stay trapped there or locked there, but you have to allow and invite people to experience the feelings that this context is provoking, especially leaders that they have to be like flight attendants for everyone else. So when they have the space to work with you, it's the opportunity to express and work through what they have been struggling in the process.
Yeah, wow. I love that because I a lot of times I think that, as you said, people need to express their emotions, and sometimes in those emotions they're a gift. So I find sometimes when people are angry, for instance, the gift may be, okay, I'm angry at something, maybe I'll set a boundary in order to alleviate that anger. So I totally agree. We can't all have smiley faces all the time. It's just not the real world. Over the last dozen years since the Great Recession, the one before this one, organizations cut their training budgets if they had them, and they promoted people into leadership roles with like no skills. And so I don't know what I'm interested to find out what you're seeing, especially on the international side, because I'm finding a lot of my clients don't know the basics of good leadership. They don't know best practices. They don't know how to delegate. They don't know how to listen. They don't know how to communicate. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But what are you finding out there, and then how do you deal with it when you find that?
Yes. I agree, but I agree that's the case in organizations that experience cuts in their training budgets and also in organizations where they had many, many trainings but were not effective. When we are having faced with an important juncture that will bring a lot of succession processes in organizations because of generational transitions that are coming, what we are seeing is that we have in mid-management and in those potential successors are subject matter experts, people who are incredibly sharp in terms of their areas of expertise, but lacking leadership skills, supervision skills, and what we usually call soft skills in terms of relationship right. building, communication, trust building, understanding team dynamics. And the other thing is that most successors today were formed by leaders who were operating still in the earlier logic of leadership is about intimidating team members so they obey what has to be done. Today, teams do not respond to intimidation. People today respond to inspiration. And what we are finding is that most leaders or high potentials are not wired and prepared to be sources of inspiration. So coaching has to focus a lot on developing those soft skills, those leadership skills, and making sure that these people are able to make a shift in that what you actually said at the beginning of the program, which is the logic of all these radio programs. They have to change their perspective. They have to change their structure of interpretation to see that what the organization, the team, needs from them is something different. Because there is a connection that leaders usually do not understand. If the experience of employees is not a powerful, fulfilling, satisfactory experience, they are not going to provide good customer service, and as a result, we will see a very weak business results. If you have, if you want good business results, you need to have a good customer experience, and only engaged and satisfied employees will provide that.
Wow. Along those same lines, in these times of chaos and certainly uncertainty, how are you, and what could you tell us, how do we prepare for the future?
I would say first that probably being very humble about not having quick fixes and prescriptions that might have been useful before, because we tend to, you know, be like a magician with a bunch of solutions in our head. Probably most of the things that we have in our toolbox will not be that helpful. But if we take a perspective of humanity in the long term, humanity has always historically, we can see, found solutions to the challenges of new junctures for which we had no idea what had to be done. So I would say, let's trust the human capacity to find solutions. After all, that's what coaching is about. As coaches, we are not producing solutions for people we work with, but trusting their capacity to find those solutions in themselves. Huh? So we are there simply to make sure that that fire inside them will grow and will produce and they will innovate and they will produce other solutions. I would say that that should be our focus and our perspective instead of thinking that we have the answers, but being confident about that, because that way we will transmit the people we work with that we can trust the capacity of humanity and human beings to find new solutions for a new context that is growing and being birthed in front of our eyes.
Oh, I love it.
Let me follow up on that. You mentioned trust a few times. Trust in the workplace is so critical, especially trusting the leaders. What are some behaviors that leaders could be exhibiting that could build trust amongst the people that they're working with today?
I would say that there's no other element as important as trust for leaders to be effective and for teams to have adequate and high performance levels. So for that, I think that consistency is key. Consistency doesn't mean that you will not introduce changes to strategies and to the way you do things, but people have to be able to get used to a new strategy and be consistent in terms of what you say and what you do and what you say and what you actually expect from people. But the other thing that is key is transparency. I mean, people have to have an understanding and actually believe that there are no secrets, that there are no hidden agendas, that the focus of the leader and every member of the team is in the shared objectives and not only in the personal objectives that each person might have for their own particular career. So in that sense, a commitment to the power of we, a commitment to consistency, and a commitment to transparency are key elements today. And finally, no one today alone will produce the solutions. So there's a need, a desperate need, to create more conversational capabilities in organizations so people are able to have the important conversations that will produce those new solutions. Leaders have to be committed to that dialogue.
And do you find leaders are aware of that, or are they finding that out, or is it something that you kind of have to introduce them to?
Many leaders are, and other leaders are facing the obstacles that will show them that there's a need for that. And there are, of course, every now and then a leader who's resisting the new scenario and the new reality. And of course, we are there to provide them with through our questions with distinctions and perspective that they might not be looking at. And our invitation to them always should be to listen to your team, listening to those who you're not meeting all the time with, to what they have to say. Usually, they have a clearer perspective than what you have in the executive suite of what should be done.
Great.
And what happens? Oh, I'm sorry. Continue.
Say it again, Bernie. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Alfredo wanted to follow up a little bit.
No. You go ahead.
Okay, so I know more time's running short, but if you could just maybe give one or two examples when the leader breaks trust and does something that's, you know, really angers their people, how do they regain the trust back?
That's very difficult. That's very difficult. In many instances, when that trust is harmed, usually is the time for that leader to leave. But there are occasions in which the leader can face the team and say, I'm sorry, this was a mistake, and here are my commitments to build credibility with my team from now on. And I commit to these two or three things. Huh? And he or she has to deliver. I mean, that has to they have to make sure that they actually do what they are saying. And there is a need, and usually team coaches, business team coaches actually have a role here. There have to be facilitated conversations in which people can actually express the extent to which that the harm to trust has impacted them. And the leader has to listen to that. And there are spaces and opportunities in which that can be fixed, but there are occasions in which leaders have to be very sensitive and say, well, it's time to go.
Right.
We are going to have an Alfredo Carrasquillo part two, because we are fascinated with you, sir, and we are out of time. So let me say thank you so much for being such a fantastic guest. Bernie, thank you, as always, for being my favorite co-host in the whole world. And tell everybody that we will see you guys next month. Take care, everybody. Thank you, Alfredo.
Thank you.
This was great.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.